It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Well, welcome to the Jason in the House podcast. I'm Jason Chaffetz, and thanks so much for joining me. We're going to have a good guest today. Katie Pavlich, who you've seen on Fox News, and amazing talent, great voice, wonderful conservative, and just a super nice person, immense talent. I got to know her back when I was actually in Congress, and she was writing a book, and came and spent a lot of time with us and our staff, Anyway, excited to have Katie Pavlich on. We're going to talk a little bit about the news and then highlight the stupid because, as you know, everybody, there's no shortage of material here. There's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere. So, and then, like I said, we'll talk to Katie Pavlich. So first, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the news. And this happened a little while ago, but a reporter asked Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House spokesperson here, does President Biden want more migrants to come to Delaware? Now, that's should be a simple question, right? Does President Biden want more migrants to come to Delaware? And she says, the press secretary, I don't even understand that question. I will move on. How can you not understand that question? It's a simple question. And, you know, the inability or the lack of desire is probably better said by this administration. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Secretary Mayorkas, others to address this massive, massive inflow of people coming here illegally is something that continues on to this day. And we shouldn't stop talking about it just because the administration refuses to stop talking about it. They're coming in by the millions. Now, legally and lawfully, there's about 1 million people that come to this country. I happen to think that we have a higher moral obligation to the people that are trying to do it legally and lawfully. And those people we are failing because that not enough time and attention is given to that. Instead, we're just saying, hey, come on over. You're a fool if you actually fill out the paperwork and try to apply for the proper visa. That's the message that's going out to the world. And that, I think, is absolutely, totally, it's just wrong. It's just wrong. Next thing in the news, something that is critical that I know that I'm just afraid that you missed it, is that Popeyes. Now, I love Chick-fil-A, but I really also love Popeyes. I think they got some of the best chicken out there. I just absolutely love it. Well, for the first time ever for Thanksgiving, you can order a Cajun-style turkey for delivery in honor of Thanksgiving 2022. So they will actually deliver it to your doorstep. You can get a turkey, a Cajun-style turkey prepared by Popeyes delivered to your door. What a great idea. Hey, Chick-fil-A, why don't you also do that? That would be a wonderful thing. I would love to have Chick-fil-A for Thanksgiving dinner, and everybody's going to get mad at me for that because, yeah, we love the traditional turkey, but what's good? I don't know. Popeyes prepared Cajun-style turkey? That sounds pretty good to me. All right, time to bring on the stupid because, you know what? There's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere. All right, I have to go to some climate activists there at VW. You know, the automaker VW? Well, overseas, they were having some sort of auto expo. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but they had their, you know, brilliant, beautiful cars. And there were 9 people who decided to go and make a spectacle of themselves at this show. So they ran up by the cars, and then they glued themselves to the floor. Now, here's what I love about VW. I've got a new appreciation for VW. One of the people who had glued themselves to the floor tweeted, at VW, told us that they supported our right to protest, but they refused our request to provide us with a bowl to urinate and defecate in a decent manner while we are glued. and have turned off the heating. People in support can't get out of the building. Anyway, it goes on from there. Now they're complaining. So they glued themselves to the floor. VW says, hey, you got to, yeah, we support your right to protest. They turned off the heat, right? Good for the climate. Good for the environment, I guess. Turned off the heat, turned off the lights, said, enjoy it, and just left them there. Now, I don't know what the conclusion of this story is going to be, but for these people who are idiots and glued themselves to the floor, complaining that now they can't get up to go to the bathroom, maybe they should have thought through that through a little bit better. That, to me, is also bringing on the stupid. For the next one, I want to talk about what over on FoxNews.com. You have Stacey Abrams, who is running for the governor of Georgia, who literally made the parallel, made the connection that said aborting a baby is good for inflation. And Ted Cruz, he tweeted out, despicable. I can't believe this needs to be said, but ending a human life is not the solution for inflation. Dan McLaughlin, a senior writer at National Review, said, I don't really expect Democrats to go with, you know, it's cheaper to feed your family if you kill a few of them in a closing argument, but yet here we are. I can't believe that she said that, had the parallel of it, and that bringing a life into this world would be such a financial burden that if you want to make life cheaper, if you want to lessen the effects of inflation, you should have more abortions. That's what she said. It's disgusting, but it's also stupid. And that's bringing on the stupid. All right, time to bring on Katie Pavlich. Katie's one of our favorites. Look, a great voice. She thinks of things that you wouldn't think of in a way that really challenges you and draws the perspective of the history of where we've been and what's going on today. And you've seen her on The Five and, I don't know, every show on Fox. She's a great voice, so I want to give a call out to Katie Pavlich.
Hello.
Katie, this is Jason Chaffetz.
Oh my gosh, Jason, how are you? Great to hear from you.
Thank you so much for picking up the phone. You know, they have this thing called the caller ID, and I was afraid I wasn't going to get through.
Well, I hope you're not in trouble, you know. The phone a friend thing, sometimes you never know where the phone call is coming from.
Yeah.
The one
That's
phone
true.
Call.
That's true.
And, I got to tell you, if I hear one phone call, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate joining us on the podcast today. And, you know, I've actually known you for a while since I was first in Congress. And you've had an amazing career and trajectory. And you got a great voice on Fox and elsewhere. And I just wanted to chat with you a little bit more about kind of who you are and where you grew up and how things came about and a little bit more about, you know, where you've come from, how you rose to where you are today, because you're such an important voice and a strong voice in you believe what you believe. And it's very compelling. So I wanted to start by going back to when you were little, Katie, little girl. Tell us about growing up. Where'd you grow up? What was life like? You know, did you have siblings? What was life like early for you?
Yeah, no, I was blessed with a wonderful childhood. I grew up in Flagstaff, Arizona. My parents lived on 5 acres of property outside of town, and I had this great window view of the San Francisco Peaks every morning. And my parents built the house, actually, before I was born and before my brother was born. I have one younger brother, and we just grew up, you know, outside in the woods, grew up hunting with fishing with my dad. You know, learning how to garden with my mom, and we traveled the West. I mean, we would go camping in Colorado in the summertime. And my father actually is an amazing outdoor cook. And so he would oftentimes get invited to do these big cooking expeditions for camps in the summer. So we went up to Wyoming one summer and he cooked for an outdoor survival camp there and we got to go. And so a lot of my upbringing was, you know, outside. You know, our field trips in school were to the Grand Canyon. So our curriculum was, I think, a lot different than most people in the country in the sense that I used to know every single layer of the Grand Canyon in terms of the rock formations.
Right.
And so we just got to do a lot of really awesome stuff. And my parents were teachers and small business owners. My dad just retired after 35 years as a public teacher. My mom was a professor. And then ran her own business. So, Yeah, I learned a lot from them. You know, the older I get, the even more grateful I am for the lessons that they taught me as a kid. And I'm just, you know, really, you know, I have a lot of gratitude for the way that I grew up and in a place that I think that I definitely did not appreciate when I was living there.
Yeah, you know, you're in your own small kind of world and cocoon, and then you think, well, everybody lives like this, right? But you, I mean, you're a very conservative person. There's no doubt about that. And you're passionate about that conservatism. Where did that come from? I mean, is that just not everybody that kind of grows up having, you know, in Flagstaff ends up like that? So where did that come from?
Well, especially Flagstaff being in the largest blue county in Arizona.
Yeah,
it's a miracle I got out. And I keep moving to these liberal places. So it's like I'm never among my own people. But no, you know, was it Margaret Thatcher who said the facts of life are conservative? You know, my parents are politically conservative, but it was just how we lived. I mean, we lived kind of off the grid. We hauled our own water and we chopped our own wood for the fireplace in the wintertime. So it was just a matter of, you know, being very independent and resourceful and not wasteful and understanding that you have to earn things. They don't just come to you. And, you know, being in a car wash that my parents owned, you know, working there and understanding how a small business operates and understanding regulations and rules that were, you know, put on them by the city and the bureaucracy of that, all of that that comes with owning a small business in a place like Flagstaff. So, you know, the way I was just living my life as a child and then into young adulthood just required me to be, I would say, just right-leaning in terms of the practice of my life. But my parents, you know, they did have a poster of Ronald Reagan and his cowboy hat in the garage. I didn't really see it was Ronald Reagan until I got older. And my parents are just politically active, whether it was on the school board or, you know, paying attention to the news. And I think I just was listening as a kid. I used to write Bill Clinton letters about tax policy when I was 6 years old. Yes, he wrote me back. I wrote him a letter about how it was unfair that he gets to take our money and we don't get to spend his money. And I got a letter back from the White House. So yeah, it just was part of my upbringing and being involved as a family locally and, you know, on a bigger scale. My parents took us to see George W. Bush when he was running for re-election in 2004. And my mom decided to protest the protesters. So she put a big sign on the car knowing we would be driving past all of them. So it just is really, I guess, part of who I am and being involved. And if you go way back, you know, I'm a daughter of the American Revolution. So when my family way back in the day got sick of King George, they came here. So, yeah. So that's really, I think, what drives that. It just is a basis for my life.
You're an exceptionally good writer, but you're also good speaking and articulating in a very quick format, you know, television, where you got to cut right to the nub of the issue pretty quickly. Where'd that skill set come from? Because some people can write, some people can speak, not everybody can do both. And that seems to be like core to your abilities here is your ability to write and speak, but I mean, you don't just pop up one day and say, oh, now I get to do this. Where did that come from?
I've always just loved the idea of and the art of debate and communication. And my mom was a public relations professor. My dad was a Spanish teacher for decades of his life. So, you know, I kind of understood how they did their work and learned from them about how to speak up for yourself, to speak eloquently, to if I was going to speak at a school board meeting, for example, which I did in high school, I needed to understand how to articulate my point of view. And
wait, let's go back. Let's hear that story. What? Not every student goes to the school board and decides to take the microphone. What got under your saddle to do that?
So our school board actually had a lot of controversy when I was, I think I was a freshman in high school, and the school board, parts of them actually got recalled. I don't remember exactly all of the details now, but, you know, I would go with my mom to the baseball games on the weekends and we would grab signatures to recall the school board because there just were millions of dollars magically missing. And, you know, while there wasn't enough funding for teacher pay increases or textbooks. There's, you know, the superintendent couldn't find a lot of this money, and millions of dollars for a small school district is a lot of money. And so I just went and spoke on behalf of the students and to back up some of the teachers who were upset, who I really, you know, appreciated in my education. So, you know, my mom led the way, but we were all a little bit involved, and I just couldn't help myself. I mean, it's just something that I just had to do. And that's kind of been the way that I've been ever since then. You know, if there's something I want to take a stand on or speak about, I tend to find a way to do that. So it's just, I've obviously been able to tailor that now to my career, and it's been very helpful. But it is a skill set, and it's still challenging for sure every day, depending on what you're talking about. And I just believe that in the line of work that we're in, people are spending their most valuable resource with you, which is their time. And if they're going to spend their time with you, you should respect their time and give them something they can take away. So I'm always trying to teach something new or take a different perspective or do a little extra research on something that may have been missed. And so that's been my approach.
The idea that they are giving you your time, and you think, mm-hmm. Well, look, I just don't want to regurgitate what is obviously right. Sitting right there on the table. What other unique perspective and thought and a way to think through that? And you do that like regularly, and it shows. It's because you know the material and done your homework, and then also have the history of thinking it through and comparing it mm-hmm. to where maybe the. Oh, now they say they're in favor of energy production, but let's go back right. a couple of years because that isn't yeah. what they were trying to do. You know, it's yep, like Mark exactly. Kelly right now is running ads in Arizona trying to tout how strong he is on the border and how he stands up to Joe Biden. And I just want to laugh at that. Like, really?
Yeah.
That ain't true. So,
yeah.
Okay. So you go through, grade school, you go through high school, and then what? Well, now it's time to go spread your own wings. What did you do?
Yeah, so I went to the University of Arizona, and there's a little bit of family history there as well. My great aunt Mary Roby was the associate athletic director there for 30 years, and really worked on Title IX and launched women's sports that were just club level sports into Division I territory, and enabled or allowed, you know, fought for the ability for women to have scholarships just like male athletes have scholarships. And so I wanted to go there, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. You know, I was certainly one of those college students who had no idea. I mean, I went had a business major, and after my second accounting class, that was something I definitely was not going to be able to do. So I then switched to, I thought I wanted to be a sports reporter, a sideline reporter. And because I grew up, my grandfather is in the Arizona High School Football Hall of Fame. He won 5 state championships. He also won basketball wow. state championships. You know, I have the sports background with U of A. I played sports in high school. So I love sports. And so I thought I was going to, you know, switch from business to being a sideline reporter. And so I changed to broadcast journalism with a minor in political science. And I think my parents were very concerned I would end up back in their home after I tried to get a job when I graduated. Luckily, it's been okay and it worked out. But then I went to a Young America's Foundation conference, and it was like a light bulb went off. Like I was finally shown the path of where I needed to go. I was like, oh yeah, I've always been into politics. Like I said, I wrote Bill Clinton letters. I always, you know, when Fox News first came on and we were able to finally get television, I was always interested in debating, you know, and I always said, I'm going to debate Alan Combs someday. That's going to be me on the other side of the screen debating him. And so I finally had this pathway. So I finished my broadcast journalism degree and then moved to DC and really just jumped right into everything happening. And I always tell young journalists who want to pursue media, you know, DC is the place to be. There's always something going on. You can really do a ton of work in a short period of time and get a ton of experience. And then you can go anywhere else in the country. So that was really my pathway to the beginning of where I am now.
I think, like I said, I think the first time I met you was you were diving into and wrote a book about Fast and Furious. And yeah. The number of meetings we had to take with Katie Pavlich to try to talk through this, it was impressive. Like, you know, sometimes you meet with the reporter and it's like, you know, they're touching the surface, but oh my gosh, you got into the nitty gritty. And, you know, yeah. I was in Congress looking at this issue, and by the time we got to the end of this, you knew it way better than we did, right? Me and my staff. But,
I don't know if that's true, but.
Well, but you wrote a great book about it. And, it, you know, talk us through that process, because I think some people wake up and say, oh, I can write a book. But writing a book is tough. It takes a lot of words you got to put on paper.
Yeah, I always talk about writing a book is like having a baby. You like black out how terrible it was, the process. That particular book was a heavily investigated journalistic piece. And I was new in town to DC. You know, the scandal had popped up where a Border Patrol agent was murdered. There was talk about the guns coming from the United States government through Operation Fast and Furious, as you know. And it really piqued my interest, I think, because A, it happened in Arizona, but B, it was all these different topics that I was very interested in, whether it was border security, federal law enforcement, gun control, ATF, holding government accountable. And new things just kept happening. And I just felt so passionately about it that I was covering it on a regular basis. And then Regnery called me and asked if I wanted to put it into a book form. And so it was such an amazing opportunity, especially given, you know, I hadn't had a ton of experience, so they were really taking a risk on me. But it was such an important story that, of course, the mainstream media wasn't covering. There was a few folks covering it, but not many. And it just was such an egregious case of government corruption, lying, and people were killed as a result, and there was very little accountability for it. So it was something that I still am passionate about. It happened a long time ago now, but it really kind of organically happened just based on the topic and the players involved.
That was really my first foray where I was disillusioned by the so-called traditional mainstream media, where here you had the Attorney General of the United States of America, the Obama administration, right after Barack Obama takes office. Suddenly they start this operation where literally nearly 2,000 weapons, mostly AK-47s, were knowingly and willingly given over to the drug cartels. And it's a stunning story, but I kept thinking, where are the New York Times? Like, where's the Washington Post? Like, what happened to all these big investigative journalists? Like, where were they?
Well, and part of the book, you know, that I talk about is actually the story in the Washington Post right before Brian Terry was murdered was all about how the Iron River of guns from the United States and these very specific gun shops was causing murder and mayhem in Mexico. But we find out later that ATF was forcing those gun shops to sell these guns and then allowing them to go to Mexico, where they lied to the gun shops and said that they wouldn't be trafficked. So they were covering it from a very different angle and basically just reprinting what the U.S. attorney in Arizona was saying about it, what the ATF agents involved were saying about it, and then smearing the whistleblowers eventually as folks who, you know, had a bone to pick or whatever. And so it was amazing to watch the trajectory of how that piece completely fell apart. They did this huge expose about, you know, the gun problem in Mexico being the fault of the United States, and therefore we need more gun control, right? That's what they were arguing. And it was all a lie. It was all a setup. Yeah. It was, and for me, you know, looking at things like the Russia investigation now and the Hunter Biden situation, I mean, it just is incredible how the same pattern still persists in the federal government and how people just get promoted for it. I mean, you said disillusioned, like that's how I feel too. I mean, it just is incredible how these things happen at this huge scale. And yet it's almost like there's no punishment at all. In fact, there's reward for what goes on.
Well, I'm kind of struck by this NBC reporter who scored the first interview with John Fetterman, who's running for the Senate there in Pennsylvania. And she goes in and gets this first interview since he had this stroke. And like nobody, you know, everybody's sympathetic with somebody who has a medical episode, but she goes out and tells the candid truth about how he was very incredibly difficult time processing, speaking, doing all this. She comes out and tells, and she's being excoriated by her colleagues instead of winning awards and saying, oh, well, this person's going to win. I mean, how in the world did we get to this place, Katie? Because I don't understand it. That seemed as newsworthy as anything. Not only did they try to bury it, but now they're trying to beat her up and make sure that she, you know, loses her career.
Yeah, it is astonishing to watch fellow, quote, journalists go after her and say that, oh, well, maybe she's the one who's bad at small talk. When you watch the, you know, it's not even what she said happened. I mean, if you watch the interview, it's reflective of her accounting of the situation. And we're in this age now, and the term gaslighting is so overused, but you watch something with your own eyes and hear it with your own ears, and yet they say it's not that. Because essentially what these people are saying is, like, what you saw this reporter do in the interview didn't happen. It's like, well, it did happen because I can see it happened, right? So we're in this very bizarre place where there's the truth, and then people just say, like, it's not there. It really does hurt my brain because it just doesn't make any sense. You know, it's crazy to do that, but then it makes you feel crazy, even though it's clear what happened. And so for them to punish her now and to take the word of the Fetterman campaign that she needs better training and to be more sensitive, really just is incredible.
Yeah, there is story after story after story of this this happening. And I had it happen firsthand. I mean, I was working with the New York Times reporter and gave him some information that should have been a page one New York Times story. And he came back shortly thereafter because I didn't see him tweeting about it or putting it out there. And he said, look, my editors just know that this will be bad for Hillary Clinton, so they're not going to run it. And I mean, it was that blatant. I mean, it was that they were blunt about, if it doesn't help Hillary Clinton, we're not going to run with it. And I thought, well, you're just a online newsletter that's, you know, for liberals only. It's you don't tell me you're the Record or the Old Gray Lady or whatever you want to claim you are. You're just not anymore.
Well, and I think that's the exact issue, right? It's one thing if you're going to, that's the behind the scenes that they talk to you about, right? My editors don't want to run this because it's bad for Hillary Clinton. But on the front end, to the American public, they claim that they're serving. They say that they're objective and that they have their best interests in mind and that they're running down stories that matter to them when they're not. I mean, just be honest. I think being honest about your political perspective actually has a lot more integrity than doing stuff like that behind the scenes while at the front claiming to be telling the truth. I mean, just be honest about the political perspective you're coming from, and then people can make their own decisions about, you know, reading your work. But they continue to just say they're the paper of record and they're objective, and it's a lie, and it's disrespectful of people's time, right? Just be honest about where you're coming from, and everybody can take that and do with it what they will.
You're listening to Jason in the House. We'll be back with more of my conversation with Katie Pavlich right after this.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so let's go back to Katie and your career here. So you go to Washington, D.C. I mean, that's a little different than Flagstaff, Arizona.
Yeah. for sure.
And Tucson down there at the U of A. Mm-hmm. All right. So you're there and you're diving in. You're covering this. You start to write. You write a book. How did you end up on Fox?
Yeah. So it's actually a really funny story. I'm glad you asked me about this. So I ended up on Fox for the first time. I was on Red Eye.
Great gut.
I was at CPAC. Uh-huh. And this was my first CPAC as a young professional. So I'd gone to CPAC many times as a student, and I was working, and I was in this jam-packed reception that had too many people. And I saw Greg Gutfeld walk in with his producer, and I think it was Andy Levy. And I immediately said, because I was always networking. And when I was in college at CPAC, everyone else was partying and I was like handing out my resume. You know what I mean? It's just like, right. I was like the nerd. So he walks in and he's over on the other side of the room. And I immediately think to myself, oh my gosh, I have to go introduce myself just to, you know, let him know who I am and that I like the show, whatever. And I'm trying to get closer and I hear Greg complaining about how the line for drinks is too long. And so they're going to leave. And so I
Greg complaining? Like, are you kidding
me? Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
I'm like, they cannot leave. Like, they cannot leave. I have to like introduce myself. No. So I barrel my way over there through all these people. And I'm like, hey guys, like I will get you a drink. Please don't leave. Like, I will get you whatever you want. What do you want? So they gave me their drink order and I cut the line and got them all a beer and brought it back and had like a short conversation. And his producer at the time, Michaela, was so grateful. I mean, just introduced myself. And so then she emailed me a couple weeks later to come on the show. So I bought a bus ticket and I got on a bus to go to New York. And 3 hours into the bus ride, the tsunami hits Japan. So they canceled the show for the night. So I'm thinking, oh no, I missed my chance. And I was staying with my brother in his dorm room because I couldn't afford a hotel and they didn't pay for travel. So I went to like my brother's dorm for the weekend and then came home and I was so disappointed and sad and whatever. So anyway, I got asked to come again. So I very excited, bought another bus ticket, went to New York and did the show for the first time. And then afterward, even though they paid for travel, they paid for a car. So I get in this fancy town car. I'm feeling all great, you know, and I tell them to take me to this address. And again, it's my brother's dorm room while I'm sleep where I'm sleeping on the floor with his three roommates in their bunk beds. And the driver drops me off and he's like, are you sure this is where you're supposed to be going? So the first time on Fox was that, but then I did some MSNBC and CNBC and Larry Kudlow.
Well, wait,
actually.
How did it go? How did it go with Gutfeld? I mean, you had to be a little nervous.
Funny. I was totally nervous. I don't think I really understood the format of the show and I didn't want to embarrass myself because I wanted to be taken seriously, but I knew it was a fun show. I don't think I did well, you know what I mean? But I made it. So I was just happy to be on. And I think right. It worked out okay since I'm working there now. But
yeah, right.
It was fun. It was fun that they had me. And my tagline was the doll from Town Hall. Because that's, you know, and so yeah, it was great. It was fun.
Yeah.
So then, you know, my boss eventually was like, you can ride the train. You don't have to keep buying bus tickets to New York. So I was on like the mega bus, you know. But then I started doing, you know, other more serious work on television. And the book really kind of launched me into a different category of doing kind of that kind of work. And so, you know, I used to do Larry Kudlow show on CNBC. He was amazing. And now I love doing a show on Fox Business. I used to do Piers Morgan's show on CNN during the 2012 election. And that was really fun. Did some stuff there from the DNC and had a pretty big moment early on about Ted Kennedy. And it was great. So yeah, that's where I really first got on Fox, but I did start covering things other than, you know, Red Eye, but it's just a funny story of how I got my foot in the door.
No, look, a lot of people did Red Eye or did, you know, a weekend show, you know, even when I was, you know, first in Congress and I'd get these calls and it was terribly inconvenient to do like super early on a Saturday morning. And I'm like, it's my only day. I can't, but I kept doing that. And you know, it's amazing how the producers, the bookers, they all kind of move around and they go from show to show to show. And you know, Fox and Friends first is like, whoa, that's early. and especially for those who, those of us who live a little west of the Mississippi.
Right.
But that's, you know, that's partly what it takes is getting the repetition and the experience. And then those bookers move to different shows and so you obviously made it happen because you do great. We love watching you there. So.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I just worked a lot, you know, and I still work a lot, but I just really tried to take advantage of every opportunity I could. And I think it paid off. You know, I think so much anymore with all the media available, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, whatever, people just think that overnight success is a thing. And it's not, it's really not. I mean, you have to work hard every day to reach your goals. And there's a lot that people see on the front end, but they don't see all the work on the back end, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. And Sean Hannity talks about this a lot. You know, he said, you know, I do all these hours on radio and then I do a TV show. He said, what nobody mm-hmm. appreciates is all the research and all right. of the development that takes mm-hmm. in order to go out and do a segment. I mean, and that's, and I've seen that with you too. You're tenacious in your kind of research and knowing the material so that you can draw the connections that maybe the rest of the audience doesn't see. And that's what people want. Right. So,
yeah.
So what's next? Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? What, I mean, you're kind of at the pinnacle, but what do you want? What do you really want to do?
It's all downhill from here. No, I'm not sure. You know, you always want to be moving ahead, right? You never want to get too comfortable in one place. But right now I'm really enjoying the work that I'm doing. And my strategy so far has been to, you know, have the plan of doing things as opportunities come along and pursuing new opportunities, but not planning too much so that you don't kind of close the door on accident on things that may come up that you didn't think about. So, you know, I love what I'm doing with Fox, getting through, you know, get through the midterm elections. I just did this really fun show for Fox Nation called Luxury Hunting Lodges of America, and that was amazing.
Yeah, that's a rough gig you had there, Katie.
Yeah,
that's
rough
a, that,
gig,
that
rough
is
gig.
That's yeah, that's really getting out
the
there
screen.
Getting the fingernails dirty. I get that.
Hey, you know what? My fingernails did get dirty a few times, I gotta say. But I got eaten alive by fire ants in Louisiana. But see, no one saw that part.
That would have
been
good TV right there.
It would have been, yes. Wasn't so pleasant for like 3 weeks after that, but I survived. So we'll see. You know, I really am enjoying the work now, and I think when you're in this space, or just if you're type A in your work like I am, you tend to fidget a lot and want to be moving on to the next thing. But I really want to also, you know, be in the moment and be grateful for the work that I'm doing now and really take it in instead of just rushing on to the next thing. So covering elections, you know, continuing to with my work at Town Hall, Fox, it's just been really great. So I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing, and then hopefully we can make some things happen down the road if they.
Well, you also
themselves.
Do some brand promotion, right? I see you out there with Black Rifle. Yeah.
Yeah. Black Rifle, Volkortson. So doing some stuff on social media with those guys. And, you know, it's just a great way to stay grounded and really be in the heart of America and understanding how business works and what people are interested in and having a lot of fun. I mean, the Black Rifle guys are always having so much fun. So it's fun to be a small part of that. American success story.
Well, at its core to what you do, it's not a reach like, oh, come on, Katie doesn't, she's not like
right.
that.
It's genuine. Yes. It's yeah. genuinely
it's
what, who I
fit.
Am and what I like to do, you know? So things are good. So I'm not sure exactly what's next, but I do know that what I'm doing now is something that I love. And, so I'm going to keep doing that well, and we'll see what the future holds.
You're listening to Jason in the House. We'll be back right after this. All right, so Katie, I don't, you know, no matter how many school board meetings you went to as a teenager complaining, I have some rapid fire questions I need to ask you. We're
okay.
not too rapid, but I got
right.
just to, we do this with each person, kind of get to know you a little bit better, gives a little different glimpse into Katie Pavlich here. So if you don't mind, here we go.
Yeah, let's do it.
What was your high school mascot?
A Mustang.
That makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
you know, some
it's now a
sometimes
Mustang.
You ask this and you're like, oh, come on. There was that. But a Mustang, that's legit. First concert you attended?
Reba McEntire and Brooks and Dunn with my dad.
Oh, very good.
Yep. It was amazing.
Were they
and
in Flagstaff or down in Air?
They were in Phoenix.
Phoenix.
And I was complaining about Brooks and Dunn because they were an opener and I didn't understand where Reba was. I was like, where's Reba? What's happening? Who are these guys? And they went on to be entertainers of the year, I think.
Right. They're put on a pretty good
ago,
show, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just like, where's Reba? But a couple years ago when they reunited in Las Vegas, I took my dad. So it was awesome.
Oh, that's good. Good for you.
Yeah.
What was your first celebrity crush?
Oh, geez. Do I want to admit this? Leonardo DiCaprio? Oh, so gross.
Oh. So you were on the wrong path, and you got back on the right path. That's good.
The path was righted, yes.
Well, he was a heartthrob for a lot of people back in the day.
He was in Titanic.
I get that. Yeah.
Before he talked about climate policy.
Yeah, exactly. That's a whole nother topic. What was your first job? I'm not talking like, hey, Katie, you got to go take out the garbage. I mean, like, away from home. What was your first job for working for somebody else?
Okay, well, my parents owned a car wash, so I have to give them credit for giving me, like, my first job, even though it was kind of volunteer.
Yeah, that works.
I didn't get paid, like, by the hour.
What were you doing at the car wash?
Shoveling mud in blizzards, digging through the, you know, bribe was you can keep the change you find in the vacuums, but you have to clean them out. So cleaning out the vacuums, taking out the trash, it was great. I mean, my mom taught me a lot about mechanics and all that kind of stuff. So that was like my first job as a family business. But my first job was, my real job was a hostess at the local country club for a summer before I went to college.
Well, that's good. You know, even though it's your mom and dad, working at a car wash. For those that don't understand Flagstaff, even though it's called, you know, it's in Arizona, it gets cold, and there's a lot of snow in Flagstaff at times.
Yeah, a lot.
Flagstaff is not the desert. It's beautiful.
7,000 feet elevation.
They got skiing up there. It legitimately gets very cold up there. What is the Katie Pavlich superpower? What can you do that, like, I'm really good at that?
I'm pretty good shot with the rifle. Yeah, that's a good superpower, right?
Yeah, that is good. Do you have a pet growing up?
Yes, we had lots of dogs. We actually used to breed Labrador Retrievers, so we had lots of labs around.
Oh, that's good.
My first word was doggy, actually.
If you could meet one person, just say, all right, we got somebody coming over for dinner tonight, dead or alive, anybody in history, who would you bring over? And who would that person be?
Anyone in history? Oh, I think I'd choose my grandpa, because I never got to meet him. And he had such an amazing life. You know, he fought in World War II, had malaria, met my grandmother in an Australian hospital when she was working there, sent her back to Arizona. They eloped in Australia, and then she waited for him to come back from the war. He had a pretty amazing life story, and he was first generation American, because his parents came to America through Ellis Island. So I think I'd probably sit with him.
Oh, that's neat. That is a good one.
Yeah.
A unique talent that nobody knows about.
Oh, geez.
You play like the banjo with your toes or something?
Oh, geez. No, but maybe I'll try that. A unique talent that no one knows about. I'm good at making pies.
Really?
I'm a pretty good gardener. That. Yeah, I'm a pretty good gardener. I can grow some, like, significant food.
Pie making is
not... I know how to watercolor. I'm a pretty good watercolor artist. I'll say that.
Is this like paint by numbers? You're pretty good at that? Or
no,
is it...
No. It's like real watercolor. Yeah.
All right. Those are good. Those are legitimate. Yeah. I got to see some of that. a pineapple on pizza? Yes or no?
Yeah. I like pineapple on pizza.
Katie, we were on such a roll. You were answering everything very impressively. That you got wrong. Judges do not like this answer. Sorely disappointed in you. Just want you to know that.
Sorry.
Just a couple more questions. Favorite menu item at Taco Bell?
Taco Supreme.
There you go. All right. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple of people when we've done this, and they're like, oh, I've never eaten. John Roberts, never have eaten it at Taco Bell.
Well, he's Canadian.
And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You got to live in the real world, brother.
Oh, it's the best.
All right, just a couple more. Favorite childhood toy?
Childhood.
I mean, you were outdoors. You were out playing, and you had the real.
My bow, maybe.
Made a toy,
a bow.
Right? But
bow was fun. I made a bow once out of a stick. That was a fun toy.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. Best advice you ever got?
The best advice I think I ever received was to run your own race. because, you know, if you look at runners and they're, you know, you always want to be competing, but if you look to the side too much, you're going to slow down. So just being true to yourself and running your own race has been pretty good advice for me.
No, that's great advice. Yeah. Katie Pavlich, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thanks for answering the phone. I didn't know if that was actually going to happen. So thanks for doing that. And great voice on Fox and everywhere else and townhall.com and all that. But thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah. No, thanks so much for having me. I'm grateful to be here.
All right. I can't thank Katie Pavlich enough. She's a great voice, great talent. You'll see a lot more of her, I'm sure, at Fox and elsewhere. And I really appreciate her taking the time. She's a good friend and a great talent, and can't thank her enough for joining us. And thanks for joining us on the Jason in the House podcast. I hope you can rate it. I hope you can subscribe to it so you get it every week. We'll be back with another guest next week. Hope you're able to join us for that. And also go check out foxnewspodcast.com. A lot of good, talented people with great podcasts out there. And anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find this. Again, thank you again for joining us, allowing us, you know, a bit of your time. I'm Jason Chaffetz. This has been Jason in the House.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.